for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll preview National Nurses Week with AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, 8th District National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. Welcome back to the program, the three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Always good to be here.
And so National Nurses Week kicks off Sunday, May 6th. J. David, tell us about it.
Every year we celebrate Nurses Week. A lot of activities throughout the country and hospitals, medical centers. And it's the time that we recognize the registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, nursing assistants, those folks who are involved in the delivery of nursing care and health care to people throughout this country. Always a big event in the VA.
Will there be specific events planned throughout the labor movement or AFGE in particular?
Definitely AFGE. We celebrate it. There will be some advertisements that will be in various publications. Our National Executive Council will be in next week, and we will certainly there will be discussions about the contribution that nurses make. And there's a large number of nurses and nursing personnel who are members of AFGE.
Beyond AFGE, what's the significance of Nurses Week on a national level throughout the country?
It's recognized throughout the entire country. I think every healthcare system that I've ever been employed in celebrates Nurses Week and tries to recognize the nursing personnel. And it's just a nice time to focus on those folks who have dedicated their lives to providing nursing care for the American citizens.
NVP Nygaard, you of course have a personal interest in this. Tell us what this means to you, what this week means to you personally.
Well, being a nurse for many years at the Minneapolis VA and knowing the job that nurses do, I think it's really important that we recognize the hard job that they do by even just recognizing them at the facilities to, you know, we're having an article in our government standard to recognize our VA nurses, our DOD nurses, our Bureau of Prison Nurses. I think that, you know, it's nice that once a year, at least, our nurses are recognized for what they do nationwide.
Are there any nurses in particular that you have met along the way that stand out to you that you think of during this week?
Well, I've certainly the nurses that are on the AFG Nurse Steering Committee. Those nurses have worked hard to put a lot of the stuff that's going out with AFG this during this week together, from being interviewed on the government standard to we worked on the AFG Nurse Steering Committee Bill of Rights as a group. And so all of those people who participated, I have to commend, and they will be recognized.
J. David, you, of course, as well, a registered nurse for a long time in the VA system. What does the week mean to you on a personal level?
It means a lot to me on a personal level because becoming a registered nurse was something I really wanted to do. And I find there are a lot of people who are in nursing. That's what they really chose as a profession. They really like, they really enjoy, and they get very excited about being a registered nurse or a licensed practical nurse or a nursing assistant. And many times people who are registered nurses have come up through the ranks and have been other healthcare providers somewhere within the nursing workforce. But it's a meaningful time. And I always kind of stop and think back to some of the nurse educators that I had when I was going to nursing school. At that time, I thought they were very tough and was always kind of hard on me, but they were preparing me. They were teaching me the things that I needed to know. They were pointing out how I needed to deliver good quality nursing care and how to assess patients and to recognize changes in their conditions and to do those things that's necessary to provide the great quality of health care that nurses throughout this country give.
As you were growing up and making decisions about what your career path would be, what drew you to nursing?
I think, the ability to care for other folks, to be involved in people who are critically ill and providing care to them and seeing them recover and go about their lives. I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing to be taking care of someone who's come in a full-blown cardiac arrest, and they're resuscitated, and in nursing care that's provided to them, eventually they leave that medical center, and 3 years later you meet them somewhere in the mall or on the street, and they talk about how great their life is going, and it's because of nursing care. I will not undermine doctors, but nurses are the ones that are constantly there at the forefront with patients and interacting.
MVP Nygaard, I'm sure you can echo some of NST Cox's sentiments on that regard.
Right. And, you know, one of the reasons I became a nurse, I actually started out as a ward clerk at a VA hospital, and my whole goal was to take care of the veterans. And, you know, in those days, you could talk with the veterans, you could see the camaraderie and the appreciation they had for everything the nurses did. So that was one of my goals.
Now, within the Veterans Administration, securing collective bargaining rights for all employees has been a long and ongoing battle. J. David, tell us about this situation and what it means for the nurses involved.
You're exactly right, Jason. It's been a long battle. The registered nurses, particularly in the Department of Veterans Affairs, do not have full collective bargaining rights. There is a portion of the law that gives the VA the right to just constantly exclude almost anything they want to deem as non-bargainable. AFG has worked very hard to get legislation introduced several times in the House and the Senate. We have not been successful yet to see it passed by either group. It was voted out of committee in the Senate this year. The Department of Veterans Affairs itself has always opposed this legislation, even though President Obama, when he was candidate Obama, made a commitment to AFGE that his administration would certainly take a look and try to correct the situation. We've had an ongoing dialogue with Secretary Shinseki with the VA, and we feel that we have made a small amount of progress, but not a great deal of progress. At least at the current time, the VA has said they would live by their own rules and regulations. That's been a real sticking point, that their own rules and regulations, when we would say you violated them and try to grieve or to force them to live by them, they would still say, well, that wasn't negotiable, and they didn't have to live by their own rules. Makes no sense to me. If you get to set the rules, why would you not choose to live by the rules you set?
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with AFGE's J. David Cox, Jane Nygaard, and Marilyn Park talking about National Nurses Week. In addition to the registered nurses at the VA, who else is affected by this?
Physicians, physician assistants, chiropractors, some expanded dental auxiliary personnel. It's a particular group of health care providers. The VA tries to always kind of couch this in an arena that veterans would die in the street if there was full collective bargaining rights, and that is certainly not true. AFGE or no other union has tried to bargain care of veterans or treatment modalities and medical procedures. I mean, that's just ridiculous to even believe that that's where we would try to go. We believe it's about bargaining working conditions, the hours of work, the rotations of schedules, areas of assignments, and things of that nature.
Marilyn, let's talk a little bit about the legislative focus on this. You obviously deal with this quite a bit in your travels to Capitol Hill. What are some legislation that might be pending and some of the feedback that you're getting from members of the House and Senate on this issue?
We have a number of bills that we are working on that address nurses' everyday working conditions, and I think Nurses Week is a great time to promote that legislation and remind people of what nurses don't have and what they need to do their jobs. As NST Cox mentioned, we are promoting a bargaining rights bill. And at this point, we are asking only to hold the VA accountable for its pay rules. While we think we need legislation on all of the issues that NST Cox raised, having to do with schedules and assignments and certain patient care and peer review issues, at this point, we're limiting our legislative campaign to just saying that the implementation of pay rules should be bargainable so that if the VA does not pay, fairly pay a nurse who works weekends or evenings, or nurse who works on a part-time basis, they could at least enforce the pay rules through the bargaining process. And in fact, the secretary has agreed in his new administrative policy to let people grieve the violation of pay rules. But what comes in practice is that often people are still blocked down at the facility level. So that's one of our legislative initiatives. The other very big one has to do with staffing. And anybody who's been in a hospital for a loved one of their own medical needs knows that understaffing is a critical problem in hospitals and that nurses are stretched very, very thin. There's only one. There are a number of nurse staffing bills in Congress. There's only one that's really strong enough and also covers all the public federal employees, including nurses at the VA, and that's H.R. 2187. The initial sponsor was Jan Schakowsky from Illinois, but there are a number of other initial co-sponsors and a growing number of sponsors. And this bill is so important because not only does it set fixed ratios for registered nurses in each of the different parts of the hospital based on the seriousness of the illness, but it also asks the secretary to come up with standards for licensed practical nurses. The most important thing in the bill that I think really makes it stand out is that it protects nurses who are whistleblowers or refuse to work in understaffed situations, protects their jobs, protects them from retaliation in other ways. And it even, through the work of AFGE working in coalition with other nurse unions, we've made sure that even nurses in the VA who, as NSD Cox said, have limited bargaining rights over other matters would have strong grievance rights if they were whistleblowing under this very important staffing law. So we are in strong support of it. There's no other bill that goes as far and covers VA nurses.
For those legislators who might not support these bills, what's the reasoning behind that?
Well, they're always arguing either cost or, as NST Cox said, we have no right to interfere. The experts are the nurses that never touch the patients. It's hard to believe that managers are the ones that know. And they don't want to acknowledge that the input of the frontline nurse is critical. They don't want to acknowledge the actual cost to patient safety and patient lives when you don't give nurses the resources and staffing levels they need. So they may argue cost, but first of all, there's a lot more at stake here. There are patients' lives at stake. There are the nurses' morale and their own licenses at stake. And ultimately, nothing is free. Patients will get hurt, and that costs everybody.
NVP Nygaard, Marilyn had mentioned this impact on everyday working conditions. Expand upon that just a little bit and talk about what that really means for nurses, even at this very moment today, going through maybe some adverse working conditions at the workplace.
Well, I think that's pretty much every VA hospital nationwide right now. We know that the budget's going to be worse next year. And so this bill, it's imperative we get this passed because it would at least assure safe staffing ratios for the nurses that take care of patients. Currently, what we're seeing VA nationwide do is increase the number of managers. For years in Minneapolis, let's say we've only had nurse managers on a ward. Now they've got assistant nurse managers. There's no ratio of nurses to patients on the wards, but this would make sure that at least if we have to have a budget crunch, we would put the nurses where they're needed, and that's at the bedside. And they continue to add additional work for our nurses, just other duties as assigned. And I think that this would certainly help our nurses, not just in safe patient care, but also in morale.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our National Nurses Week discussion with AFGE's J. David Cox, Jane Nygaard, and Marilyn Park.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member. And in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number from MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined now again by J. David Cox, AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer, Jane Nygaard, 8th District National Vice President, and Marilyn Park, AFGE's Legislative Representative. Before the break, we were talking about some legislation on Capitol Hill related to understaffing. Let's really get into this issue at the workplace and how that impacts patient care. J. David?
Anytime you have inadequate staffing, patients will suffer the consequences. And I hear people will many times argue about, well, they're hollering for more staffing so they don't have to work so hard. It's not that a nurse's mind working hard. It's the fact that they want to do a good job. There's all type of documented evidence about failure to rescue. That means that if nurses aren't regularly seeing patients, they don't notice the subtle changes that's occurring with them, that it's just slight changes in vital signs, their color, their respirations, things of that nature, till all of a sudden the person is in a serious crisis situation. It's not that all of a sudden somebody just has something massive and you immediately know it. Most of the time, it's very, very subtle changes. People progressively get worse. Having adequate staffing where patients are regularly seen, where that people are not waiting for pain medication with a lot of documented evidence. If you can control pain, people heal faster from surgery, other type of things. So pain is a very, very important control issue. Well, if you've got 15 patients to try to medicate and they're all hurting at once, that's an impossible task.
You bring up a good point, two good points with pain management, but also with really a consistency in the care, talking about how a nurse should be able to consistently monitor the patient to be able to pick up on those subtle changes to maybe give take the care in a different direction?
Definitely that, in a different direction to immediately intervene with whatever medical interventions or nursing interventions that's necessary. And also, when you have adequate staffing, the nursing personnel is readily available to teach patients. I mean, there are many things that we have to teach people. Diabetics, there's a constant teaching those folks about monitoring their insulin, monitoring their blood sugars, proper eating habits, the diet, skin care, looking at their feet, as well as many other healthcare issues. It's a constant teaching process. But if the nurse is just jumping from one person to the other to meet the immediate crisis needs, there's not the time to develop that relationship to do what is necessary to give the optimum care.
NVP Nygaard, I'm sure you know as well as J. David, this idea that almost nurses are being worked to the point of exhaustion. What's the impact there, not only on the nurse, but also then on patient care in the facility?
Well, what we tend to see nationwide, unfortunately, is workarounds. So if there's a way to deliver medications and if there's not enough nurses or there's not enough equipment or whatever, nurses tend to sometimes do workarounds. And workarounds would be sometimes and oftentimes could impact patient safety because they're basically making shortcuts, because they have no option because they have so many patients to take care of and so many things they can do and only so many hours in the day. So I think what we need to do is we need to, and that's why this bill is so important, as we increase the acuity of the patients on the wards and we continue to add additional competencies to our nurses, I think that we as a union need to try to ensure through legislation or whatever that all of that is taken into account and that that assignments are done properly, which means we'd have to have staffing ratios. And since we can't get that through management without legislation, we need to move this bill.
Are legislators and decision makers taking notice at some of the things that AFGE is saying about this issue?
Well, I think some of them are. Unfortunately, not a lot of them are. I think what happens is VA nationwide, you know, like if Congress asks, like, how many nurses you have at one VA or whatever, they give them just a blanket statement of we got all these nurses, and then they look at them and say, well, you seem to have enough staff at the bedside, when in reality, they don't pick out the number of nurses that are in administrative jobs. They don't pick out the supervisors. They add them all as a group, and it looks like maybe we have enough staff, but when we get down to the bedside, that isn't accurate.
Marilyn, from a legislative perspective, you, of course, mentioned Congresswoman Schakowsky's bill. Who are some other champions that you turn to when you're doing your work to get some support for this?
Well, the Democratic leaders on both the House and Senate have been very strong advocates of the rights of nurses to have a voice in the workplace. The ranking member Bob Filner in the House and Chairman Patty Murray have both championed this bill. It's been introduced on multiple occasions from Sherrod Brown from Ohio and Senator Rockefeller from West Virginia. And we very much appreciate the support of all the initial Senator Webb. Senator Cardin's on the bill now. So we have a number of supporters in the House and Senate of bills both for bargaining rights and for staffing. And we really do appreciate. I also want to mention that I think over the last few years I've noticed that at hearings when there are questions about VA's ability to deliver care, there seems to be more and more sensitivity to the pressures of the workforce and nurses and other people delivering direct care. And I think that's a really good sign and also testament to the work we've done to say we are suffering from the same problems as the patients and that we have inadequate resources and staffing. So I think we're getting less beat up and blamed. But I do want to mention one part that I think has popped up recently, a problem that's quite bad, is that we are not, I mentioned the retaliation provision in the staffing bill. Well, in general, we do not have strong enough protections against retaliation for nurses and other frontline clinicians who speak up for their patients. We've had some clinicians who provide mental health care speaking up at Senate hearings recently and have suffered extreme retaliation for talking about a lack of appointments and other resources for high-risk suicidal patients. And our nurses every day see these high-risk patients, and they risk their jobs when they try to speak up and say this patient needs more immediate care. And we're working very hard AFG-wide to get legislation to better protect federal employees from whistleblowing. And we're working with trying to press Congress and the Obama administration to provide real whistleblower protections for federal workers in all agencies. And that would very much help the nurses at the VA and other federal hospitals.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE's J. David Cox, Jane Nygaard, and Marilyn Park on this issue of protecting whistleblowers from retaliation and things like that. What's the impact on morale when those things happen?
I see it every day, and especially when I'm trying to talk to people who want to testify at hearings. People are scared every day for their jobs because they come to work at the VA to care for veterans. That's why they're there. And then they're basically told, you have to cut corners and diminish the care provided to veterans in order to keep your job. And I think they're caught in an impossible choice of having to stay employed or speak up and risk, because there's no support for, in fact, there's widespread lack of support for people who speak up for patient care and question policies that diminish care.
NST Cox, I keep coming back to this, but it seems like everything that we're talking about here, these issues somehow trickle back to patient care. Is that message being accepted by others? Are people realizing that this is really like a life and death situation sometimes in these hospitals?
I clearly believe that there are many members of Congress that are accepting that. And I do believe that in a lot of the healthcare systems, the VA included, that there are managers that understand it. But I think there's a general philosophy of always trying to get by, do it on the cheap, do it with less resources, production assembly line mentality type process. And we're dealing with health care. We are dealing with people's lives. And in today's health care environment, you are pretty much critically ill to be an inpatient in a hospital. Most procedures, things that people used to be hospitalized for, is now done as outpatient. Again, there is a lot of things of education and training of of people and making patients aware, constantly the educating of patients about their own health care. But it requires a lot of work, and it requires a lot of staff, and it's very intense work. And no one knows when they're going to be the next patient in a bed somewhere. I mean, no one has a guarantee this afternoon where they will be. And if it's me, I want to be in a healthcare facility that has good staffing, where I'm going to receive the best care in the world, so that, you know, I can return to a normal status pretty quickly.
Many of these conversations, as you mentioned, center around money and doing more with less. We're obviously in a very contentious environment here in Washington, with budget battles going on every day. What's the impact there on the VA and some of these other agencies where we have registered nurses?
Well, there's always an impact because the Congress of the United States has to appropriate money. We seem to be in an environment in this country right now that no one wants to pay taxes, and most of us will moan and groan about paying taxes. But at the same token, to have government, and government is good, that does require us to pay taxes. I like the idea that I can call the fire department if my house catches on fire, that I can call the police if somebody's trying to rob me, or if I drop over with a heart attack on the street, that the paramedics are going to come and take care of me. And I look at the VA, where MVP Nygaard and myself both spent many years of our lives working. I see those veterans. These men and women place their lives on the line for this country. They gave everything that they had. Many of them suffer illnesses and injuries for a lifetime of this their service to this country. They have paid their health insurance premiums absolutely in full, and this country should provide that health care for them. I am proud to pay my taxes to support VA health care and veterans benefits, as well as all the other things that good government does in this country.
During these budget discussions, we've often heard the term sequestration thrown around. Are you expecting that to impact the VA at all?
It is our understanding that the VA would be exempt from sequestration should that occur, because the VA has what's called advanced appropriations, which AFG fought very, very hard for, where it's funded 2 years out. There still may be some very fine lines in the law that there would be folks that would certainly try to implement that. But again, you are dealing with the largest healthcare system in this country and the best healthcare system in this country, and it would be very, very sad to start taking money and resources out of it while we have veterans lined up and down the street waiting for the care.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our National Nurses Week discussion with AFGE's J. David Cox, Jane Nygaard, and Marilyn Park.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're continuing our discussion with AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, 8th District National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. NVP Nygaard, we've spent a considerable amount of time here on the show talking about the VA and some of the challenges that the VA nurses face. But we also have a number of other AFGE members who are registered nurses that work for other agencies, specifically the Bureau of Prisons and the Department of Defense. Can you talk about some of those unique challenges that they face that might be different than some of the other registered nurses at AFGE?
Yes. The BOP nurses, the Bureau of Prison nurses, and the Department of Defense nurses, those nurses don't receive true overtime. That means if they have to work mandatory overtime or if they volunteer to work overtime, they don't get paid time and a half. That's a huge issue for them, and that's something that we've been trying to work on for a few years. But again, with the budget being the way it is nationwide, the first thing Congress looks at is how much money is it going to cost. The other thing that they have is that, again, just like especially the DOD nurses, just like the VA nationwide, they have budget restraints. And we know that many of the DOD bases across the nation are going through RIFs now or management reassignments. And that's a huge issue for them. What we're also finding out is that our Department of Defense nurses, many of them are supervised by the military, which is somewhat difficult because the military has a different mindset on how you deal with civilians, and because they're not used to doing it. So what's happening in DOD is that many of the positions that were previously civilians are being taken over by the military. So you've got kind of like two different types of personnel systems, and they have to try to deal with that and work through that. The other thing with the Bureau of Prison Nurses, they also have the same staffing issues that the Department of Defense and the VA have, but they also have security issues because they do work in a prison. So as their staffing decreases at our medical facilities especially, as the staffing is decreased because of the budget, their security issues become greater. So these nurses face the same problems as VA as far as staffing, but they also have other outside issues like the RIFs and the security issues.
In regards to the BOP and DOD nurses not having a true overtime system, why is that? Why aren't all registered nurses in the federal government treated the same way regardless of which agency they work for?
Well, that was probably an act of Congress. The VA nurses fall under Title 38, and the DOD Bureau of Prison Nurses fall under Title 5 rules. So that's why they're paid differently. The VA, they actually implemented specific legislation to make sure our nurses would get paid true overtime and premium pay, et cetera, et cetera. The DOD nurses fall under the FLSA exempt, non-exempt rule.
The other thing I wanted to expand upon with you was the security issues with BOP nurses. I imagine that's a very daunting task for some of them working in that environment. What are some of the AFGE BOP nurses saying about that?
Well, I think it's like any other place. I mean, the staffing is a huge issue, but for them, again, it's the security issue, because if you haven't been to a medical facility at the Bureau of Prison, you probably should visit one. When I went there, I mean, I was just like, they were all, the prisoners were all lined up getting their medications, and I had to walk in between them. They don't carry guns at the facilities. You know, they just basically have a walkie-talkie, and the nurses, of course, are in medical areas. But even so, the people that they take care of are prisoners. So, yeah, there is some concerns about as staffing decreases, that their security risks increase.
Now, AFGE utilizes its Nurses Steering Committee to fight for the rights of all of these nurses, BOP, DOD, and the VA. NVP Nygaard, as the head of that committee, can you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing there?
Well, we've been working with AFGE's lobbyists to try to get some legislation moved on trying to get the nurses true overtime. Unfortunately, we're not gaining much ground with that because, again, like I said, they seem to think that it's going to be quite costly. In reality, I don't think it's going to be hardly any money compared to what we put out in the budget. So that's one issue we're working on. As far as DOD, we do try to work on the fact of trying to make it clear that our civilians are civilians, and the military have different rules, and somehow we need to educate the military to the rules of the civilians. That's a kind of an insurmountable task, though, to do. So currently, in the government standard, we do have a little deal in there, I guess you'd say, that we want to get more people from BOP and DOD involved. Our steering committee started out with a whole group of VA nurses, BOP and DOD, but unfortunately many of the DOD and Bureau of Prison Nurses have dropped off. So we're trying to recruit activists who really want to participate in this committee to try to make these changes. But the AFG Nurse Steering Committee did do a Bill of Rights, which would include the rights of all nurses, not just VA nurses, and basically that they'd have equal rights to negotiate over conditions of employment, the best health care for the patients, practice safely, and also have adequate training to do their jobs. So we are trying to revamp the group and get some more activists on from BOP and DOD.
For those federal nurses who are listening to the program today that might want to get involved, how can they do that? Is there a way they can reach out to you to get more information?
Right. It's going to be in the government standard, but they can contact me at my email address, nygaaj@afg.org, or my cell phone, 763-234-1324. They do need to be approved by their MVP, but they can come to me with their names, and then I would go to the MVPs and assure, you know, make sure that they're approved or ask them to approve them.
MVP Nygaard, we were lucky enough several shows ago to sit down and talk to a couple of the Nurses Steering Committee members, Lisa Hartman and Shiloh Schalk. And the one thing I took away from that conversation was a great amount of enthusiasm from both of them. Are you getting the sense that the Nurses Steering Committee is really starting to build up some steam to get in the direction you want to go?
Yes, I do feel that way, and we are trying to get – we've got some new nurses on there. Shiloh is one of them, and then the other one is Linda Ellenson. So, you know, we're getting some new nurses who want to participate, and we you know, with that you get new ideas and new ways to do things, which is really positive.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined with J. David Cox, AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer, Jane Nygaard, AFGE 8th District National Vice President, and Marilyn Park, AFGE's Legislative Representative. Marilyn, another key issue that we're looking at is some downgrades at the VA. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. You know, a hospital is run by the doctors, nurses, and also the people who take patient appointments, keep the hospital safe, the police, people who keep the medical records. And when one of the ways that we short-staff nurses is not just to have too few nurses in a ward, but to also not give nurses the administrative backup that they need. So they end up having to do administrative functions, and that takes away time. There's time from direct patient care. The VA has engaged in, over the last year or two, has started to engage in a widespread attack on the people who support the nurses and doctors on the floor of the hospital and in the clinics. And they are attempting to downgrade, as I mentioned, people who play these functions like keeping appointments, keeping medical records, and also the police. And they're lowering their class, looking at their grades and telling them that they're overpaid and not giving them adequate interviews to see what their jobs actually are. And they're doing these sort of crude across-the-board downgrades, sometimes one and two grades, which to some people amounts to like a third of their cut pay scale, and they're already many. These people are modestly paid. And so in many cases, this is happening especially in Texas and in parts of Virginia right now, but we've been told, they have admitted, that this is a test for the rest of the country, and we can expect these downgrades to be happening all over the country. And again, they're not following the process that OPM requires. They're not really asking people what their jobs are. And we also think we're asking these administrative support people who make modest wages to carry an unfair burden of cost savings in the hospital. And again, the patients will be affected in the end because the overall delivery of care will be affected if we don't have a strong support system.
NST Cox, we've covered a number of key issues here: downgrades, understaffing, underfunding, retaliation to whistleblowers. How do all of these things that we're discussing impact the morale of the workers on the ground?
Well, they certainly impact the morale, Jason. Obviously, when you have a good work environment and you feel good about the job you are doing, you do a much better job. I mean, if you're speaking up and saying there's inadequate staffing, there's inadequate resources, and immediately someone threatens your job or threatens your well-being, then that's an effect upon morale very, very easily. And anytime you talk about messing with somebody's pay, you get people up in arms. Most of us live and have budgets and understand the amount of money we make and try to live within that framework. And if someone's talking about lowering that amount of money that you have, that's a real impact. And yes, to lower and downgrade the clerical positions in a medical center will affect the nurse staffing. It will affect the morale of the nurses because, again, these folks are going to leave or there's going to be less of them. And, again, that has an effect upon the delivery of care. And many of these positions, particularly in the VA, are held by veterans themselves. There are high numbers of the positions that are veterans. There's large numbers of nurses in the VA that are veterans, but I would suspect the numbers would be higher in a lot of the other positions.
How is AFGE partnering with third-party groups or other unions, perhaps, to deal with some of these issues and to bring them to light?
We work with AFL-CIO and the Department of Professional Employees with AFL-CIO, with the AFL-CIO Union Vet Council, and other AFL-CIO affiliates. We have worked with NFI on some issues, National Federation of Federal Employees, several other unions that we have certainly tried to push an agenda item. We've worked with CWA. They actually represent nurses throughout the country. And the American Federation of Teachers has a component of health care that they represent a fair number of health care workers. And we've worked with them on important pieces of legislation.
Before we go to break, you had mentioned earlier that all you were really asking for was the VA to live by the set of rules that it had established. Have you been able to discuss this with management or even Secretary Shinseki himself about some of these things?
I've had several personal meetings with the Secretary to discuss these. Actually, in the last meeting that I had with the Secretary said, oh, yes, we will live by our own rules. We should live by our own rules. However, we continue to struggle with the VA management when we want to institute that policy and to try to file grievances or other disputes over the fact that they have not lived by their rules. And we continue to hear we don't have to live by the rules. It's been a very disappointing thing. And we try to hold the Secretary to task over this, and we will continue to try to hold him to task.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our National Nurses Week discussion with AFGE's J. David Cox, Jane Nygaard, and Marilyn Park.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're continuing our discussion with J. David Cox, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer, Jane Nygaard, 8th District National Vice President, and Marilyn Park, Legislative Representative. J. David, given that many veterans are employed by the VA, what are your thoughts on veterans' preference in making sure that veterans have a job when they come home from combat?
Oh, clearly, I support veterans' preference. I believe that should be the law of the land. And veterans deserve those opportunities. Many of them come out of the military already with a lot of very good skills, and that's with the jobs that they did in the military. So they're already well primed for those type jobs. And it saddens me when I see the government contract out jobs that should be going to veterans. And also in the private sector, when we're not advocating for the programs like Helmets to Hard Hats and other very, very good programs that assist veterans in the transition from that life of being in the active military to being a private citizen again.
In your experiences as a registered nurse for quite some time, talk about what you saw when a young soldier coming home from combat, what that transition was like from coming home after being abroad and then back to the United States and getting reintegrated into the workforce?
Very obviously, years ago when I started in the profession and at the VA, we were dealing with a large, large population of Vietnam veterans at that time. We had not properly diagnosed post-traumatic stress syndrome, and we were not properly treating people for that. We understood, we saw the behaviors, we saw that they didn't sleep, that they were had constant problems and emotional problems and the the ability to interact and to develop relationships with folks. And I think we've come a long ways in treating post-traumatic stress and to taking care of those folks and getting them back on the road to being very productive and living normal lives. But today's veterans that are coming home, I don't believe you can go to Afghanistan or Iraq or the places that we have had wars going on and not suffer PTSD. It's a very traumatic situation, as well as we see the veterans come back now with a severe trauma, brain injuries, loss of several extremities, loss of vision, severe internal injuries, things that are many years ago, veterans would have actually died on the battlefield, but our technology is much better. But still yet, there is a lifetime of care. Many veterans have prostheses and all. So it's a lot of work, and it's an adaptation. And then there's the acceptance of family, society, and them finding a job that they can work with some of their limitations.
You and I have talked many times, both on the air and off, about some of the stresses that soldiers go through under combat. And I remember you mentioning that the human body, the human mind, was just not designed to withstand some of these things and to expect a soldier to come home from combat and not have any challenges of reintegrating. It's very difficult.
Extremely difficult. I mean, I struggle to stop and imagine that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you are in an environment where there can be bombs, there can be, live ammunition fires, there can be attacks, there can be air raids, there can be all of these type things, there can be sniper activities that the person that you have a strong relationship and work with every day that all of a sudden is shot or is some type of mortar and they no longer exist. I mean, that's a tough thing for any mind to comprehend and to deal with. And then, sure, you're discharged and the next day you go poof, all that goes away. Life just doesn't work that way.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined by AFGE's J. David Cox, Jane Nygaard, and Marilyn Park. MVP Nygaard, with some of these things that we're talking about now, how much of that plays into the homeless problem that veterans face, and what is AFGE doing to assist in making sure that these veterans don't become homeless?
Well, we're working with Congress on a legislation to make sure that they're not homeless, but also as a union, we talk to management, and it has to do with staffing again. I mean, the bottom line is we do have a homeless program in the VA. The problem is there enough staff to take care of them? I know that the social workers are overworked, the ones that are there in the homeless program. No matter what we do, it just doesn't seem like it's quite enough. So I guess the basic thing we can do is continue to work with Congress and the VA to see if we can get additional staff. But like I said, at a time like this with the budget the way it is, that's been difficult.
How does that impact you personally when having been a registered nurse for so long and worked with
with veterans, and then to see that some of them almost slip through the cracks a little bit and have to deal with this horrible issue.
Well, it's pathetic, and like David said, you know, these veterans come back in Vietnam. You know, they did one tour usually, and sometimes people would re-up for a second tour. These people have been there two, three, four times, some of them. So, I mean, they're really in need of care, not just mental health care, but physical care. Well, I recently had a meeting with the social workers in the homeless program, and, you know, they're building a new building, and they're going to have showers and washers and dryers there for these people to come in and take a shower and clean the clothes that they have, which may be just the only ones that they've got on their body. But it's heartbreaking is what it is. And it's just, you know, what can we do as a society to change that?
Marilyn, as you know, contracting out has touched all corners of the federal government. How has that issue impacted the nursing situation at the agencies that we've been talking about, VA, DOD, BOP?
Even though these agencies have adequate budgets and NST Cox mentioned in the VA when they have the money to hire nurses, but especially with advanced appropriations, they should be able to hire their nurses and staff them with permanent jobs. However, what they do is they over-rely on agency nurses, and those are short-term kind of like leased employees who come in. They don't have the expertise to work with veterans. They don't have the experience to work on the late-night shifts, which means the more experienced VA nurses, and this happens probably in DOD and BOP too, end up having to cover those later shifts even though they have seniority. But it's once again the VA trying to do it on the cheap, and trying to not recognize the experience and what's experience and seniority and dedication to the VA bring to the patient care. And with agency nurses, you can control it. But there's really no excuse in the VA, especially where they have advanced funding and they know a year ahead that they're going to have enough money to staff.
Looking ahead to the rest of 2012, how optimistic are you that progress will be made legislatively on a number of these issues?
Well, this is a hard year to get bargaining rights. We expanded bargaining rights, but I'm very proud that we continue to build co-sponsorship on our bargaining rights bill. We've had a number of people in the House join the House bill in the last few months. I think the nurse staffing bill is a long haul. I think our immediate goal is there is a Senate companion bill that was introduced by Barbara Boxer, and the only difference is that, well, the language is the same. It doesn't cover the VA, and so we hope to get her bill to cover the VA. Ironically, in California, if you go to a non-VA hospital, you have staffing ratios, and the families know when a ward is adequately staffed when their loved one is there in critical care. But if they were in a VA hospital in the same California town, they would not be. So that would be our immediate goal, is to strengthen the nurse staffing bill. I think one small fix that we're talking about all the veterans in the VA is it is ironic that VA healthcare frontline employees, whether they're RNs, licensed practical nurses, pharmacists, physical therapists, doctors, physician assistants, anybody who's under the Title 38 system does not have equal veterans preference protections. And that was a loophole in the law that I think is glaring and needs to be fixed. And a very small legislative fix would make sure that they have the same rights to appeal when their veterans preference is violated.
NVP Nygaard, as we prepare to close out here, what's the one thing that you want listeners to know about National Nurses Week?
Well, I just want them to enjoy it. I want them to realize the importance of nurses nationwide. And I'm hoping that people will work together to try to move some of this legislation forward, not just for VA and DOD and BOP nurses, but all nurses nationwide. But as Marilyn said, with all of the negative talk about unions nationwide and federal employees nationwide, moving anything forward these days is difficult.
And you, NST Cox?
Again, I would join with Jane saying that, you know, I want the entire American public to be excited about nurses and to certainly reach out to nurses during this coming week and to recognize that nurses provide a lot of the health care. They're there when we're born. They're usually the ones there when we leave this world and many times in between. So, you know, appreciate the work that nurses do.
And we appreciate the three of you coming on and joining us today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you to our guests this week, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, 8th District National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government.